What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hardcast. We are fast approaching LobsterCon, and we're cranking out one last episode before we start going full hype mode on the biggest tournament ever yet to come. My name is Bradley Stone today. To my left, I have the pleasure of being joined by...
Billy Mills Curran. Howdy, folks. And we are joined remotely with... Introduce yourself,
Travis
buddy.
Schneider.
Oh.
Travis Schneider from the tribe. And we are going to be talking about some Tireless Tribe today. A deck that I've been pretty interested in lately, fiddling around with, having mediocre success with. And I wanted to go a little deeper into the deck and get a little one-to-one coaching session from one of the more established players of the archetype. I think it's pretty safe to say that you are one of the pillars in the tribe. Is that fair to say, Travis?
That is 100% correct.
Are you the chieftain of the tribe?
What if we have some sort of non-democratic, I don't know, anarchist voting session?
Ah.
Nice. And also, I would be remiss to mention that Travis is also one of the co-hosts of the Shared Discovery podcast, a podcast that I've been listening to for a long, long time. You guys definitely have one of my more favorite pre-modern podcasts, I think. I really enjoy the laid-backness, the kind of homey vibe that you guys have going on there. How long have you guys been doing the podcast for?
So almost 2 years. It'll be 2 years this summer. So we started after LobsterCon 23, and our running joke is we are the fourth best podcast, and that is behind you guys.
Yeah, you guys bumped up, right? You were number five before?
Yeah, we beat out the two Cabal therapists.
Nice. On the up and up.
Have you guys ever listened to, was it Old Men?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody talks about them.
Yeah, they're super chill. They're
very calm.
They're like in their own lane and like doing their own thing at their own pace and like not minding anybody else.
Yeah,
but that's like a YouTube channel, right?
They have a podcast as well on Spotify.
They have a podcast, but they do like Deep Dive, Odyssey,
okay,
and stuff like that. It reminds me a lot of what's that? That really, what is it? With like the Season of the Witch and all that, and like. What's that YouTube channel where they...
I don't know.
Do deep dives on like...
Is it like Rhystic Study?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They got energy like Rhystic Studies.
Oh, or like the one that... Oh, gosh. I'm blanking on everything right now. But anyways. So as far as tribe goes, do you guys have like a name for your tribe crew? Because being a tribe is very cool. Like I'm always a little bit jealous that we're a crew, but you guys get to be a tribe. Is there like an official name for the tribe?
So our group chat is the Tribe Guys. And do they have that burger restaurant chain up in Massachusetts, Five Guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like Tribe Guys, Burger and Fries. But for the longest time, we've called ourselves the Tribe Tribe.
Right. Okay, so sick. And then, like, I feel like you guys just, like, on top of, like, being a cool tribe, you guys also have, like, all these, like, little niche cool names for the shit that you have going on. Like, your LobsterCon house is going to be the Mojo Dojo Casa House.
So, I got our official stickers for that and some other weird bullshit that I haven't shared just yet. We have a couple of unhinged plans.
Hell yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Keep it close to the chest for sure.
And you're from Atlanta.
Yes, sir.
What's good in Atlanta? I've never been.
I don't know. Do you like pollen?
Not particularly. Dude,
our pollen count was over 14,000 last week. It like broke this huge record.
Oh, shit.
Everything outside is green.
Was everybody else sneezing and unhappy?
I mean, like, I grew up here, so I'm used to it, but if you're not from here, it's awful.
Was the show Atlanta a reasonable representation of what it's like to be down there?
I never watched it.
You never watched it?
I also have not watched it.
Neither have I. I've seen some clips. You didn't watch it because you're living it.
Yeah. So what's pre-modern like down in Atlanta? Like, you guys have a scene going on. How is it there? How's that popping?
It's pretty bad. I mean, so We Atlanta has a huge metropolitan area, so someone who lives like 3 hours away from Atlanta will tell you in conversation, yeah, I live in Atlanta. So all of us live roughly about an hour away from each other. Like, y'all know Gabe Menendez, yeah. Like he and I live like an hour away, and he just like never goes to any meetups. And like for me to go to a meetup, it's an hour drive, because it doesn't matter what card shop we choose. It's an hour drive. Got so,
So, I mean, do you guys have like a decent following though in the 3 hour radius? Like, how big's the crowd?
So when we do our tournaments, like we had the clobbering, like because the scene in the Southeast is so small, like we had people from the Carolinas, from Tennessee, from Alabama, and even from Mississippi, just because like there's really just not that much happening. Like North Carolina has probably the biggest scene, which is interesting. And we're just more central to everyone. But if you're not from the United States, you might not know like how big like the southern states are, really, because it's like I can drive 5 hours south and I'm still in Georgia, and 2 hours north and I'm still in Georgia.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've been to Kings Bay once.
I just drove down to North Carolina recently. It was a beautiful drive. Georgia seemed very pretty. Okay, so is there not like legacy or modern or anything like that popping down there?
Oh, there is. I thought you meant for pre-modern.
No, I was speaking to pre-modern, but like it's like usually like if they're seen for like these more eternal formats, especially legacy, like there's kind of a carryover in the crowd. At least that's been the case up here. Yeah.
So we tried reaching out to like disenfranchised modern players. But really, our bread and butter is, like, disenfranchised legacy players.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so you have a little bit of them coming in, but, like, not a lot.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, like, we had a meetup in December of, like, 2024. That was, like, 20 dudes. And that was huge for us of, like, oh, my gosh, a meetup with 20 guys. And then after that, like, we've been struggling to hit double digits.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's tough, man. I mean, the Northeast is pretty compact, and like it's pretty easy for like somebody up in New Hampshire to make it up to like a monthly tournament, or Connecticut or Rhode Island or whatever. So yeah, definitely doesn't take 5 hours to drive up and down Massachusetts. That's for sure.
Yeah. We probably have probably in like in a straight line across like 4 hours, you could probably hit five different events.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a given week.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's only growing, too.
We didn't even mention that there's a South Shore crew.
We did. PTA crew?
No. Oh. Massachusetts.
Oh, Tormod's Crypt Keepers?
Maybe? They have a store.
I did want to shout them out. I felt a little bit bad that we forgot about the Tormod's Crypt Keepers. They're up and coming, and their logo is sick as hell. So,
hell yeah.
Shout out to you guys. Sorry we missed you on the last episode. But yeah, should we jump into a little bit of tribe talking right now?
Well, I want to talk about the peach clobbering.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
How was that?
Let's hear about all those peaches that got clobbered.
It was good. We had it in a distillery. We had 20 guys. We gave away some Modern Horizons, Mystery Booster 2 packs and boost, whatever. It was like we split like two boxes, and then like good drinks. Maybe y'all heard. I asked my mom to make a peach cobbler, and she did.
Oh, how was it?
It was good. I don't know. Like, I was so drunk.
that sounds reminiscent of LobsterCon. I remember you guys chugging Malort basically out of the bottle.
Okay, so what's the deal? Nick had hinted that there might be officially Malort served because I did some naughty things last time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No outside liquor to all you listeners. We're going to be on our good behavior this year. The word on Malort seems to be positive as of now. The Dante reached out to me asking where they could find it, and I forgot to respond to them. But I think that they are capable of coming across it. I did see that it's carried at Total Wine. I don't know if it's up to your high standards, because it like might be one of those like things where it's like, you know, the creme de la creme of the region just kind of stays there, and then like they just export the shit out everywhere else. It had like a gold yellowish label on it. Does that mean anything to you?
I mean, is it, it's like Jepson's or something like that?
It might have been, yeah, when we looked it up, yeah. But yeah, thanks to you guys, we are trying to get Malort at LobsterCon. That is the plan. And we're going to have it one way or another, I think. Whether I have to go and drive to Total Wine the week of and pick it up and hand it to Mario myself, or if he has to go and buy it himself, the plan is definitely to be drinking some Malort. I actually didn't think it was that bad. I kind of liked it, but I like bitter things. So, like, bitter is an acquired taste. And
okay.
I have the taste.
I don't even know how that works. I don't know if you can like show up to a bar and just be like, "Hey, I'm giving you this for you to distribute." I don't know if they have to have like a special tax or something. I don't know.
I offered that in the Discord and people jumped all over me and like completely took it the wrong way. It's like, what do you think I'm? Here's this thing. Sell it back to me, and people were like upsetty about it. So I don't know.
Well, I'm a tournament organizer, and you know, I'm meeting with like I have met with Mario and discussed all these types of things, and he asked us what he wanted us to carry. So I think I have slightly more sway. I'll say that.
We'll see.
Yeah, but the plan is to have it. The plan is definitely to be ripping some Malort shots with the Shared Discovery crew and whoever else wants to come and gag on some putrid. Bitter alcohol. It's like fucking moonshine.
Yeah, made out of like fermented dead fish or something.
Yeah.
Well, I know y'all are going to be kind of working, but if you are partaking, then first shots on me, guys.
Nice. All right, I'm taking you up on that. I got a tab going right now of all the people that have offered me to buy me a drink, and I'm taking you up on that and holding you to it.
You can have mine, Brad.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I get two. Yeah. It's kind of tough too, because like I'm thinking about playing in this main event on Saturday, and this is going to be after, you know, 2.5 days out in Boston, like partying and all this shit. And I'm like, how am I going to play in this event? Like,
you're just not gonna
take? Yeah, I'm going to fucking scrub out immediately. Like,
you're used to it. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
What's the most brain dead deck? Just play that.
So yeah, is Tribe the most brain dead deck? Because I've been thinking about playing it at LobsterCon. Honestly, I'm like. Little tuned out of Terrageddon these days, and I'm like, I've been having so much fun with Tribe that I'm like tempted. I'm tempted to send it.
I was like pretty drunk by my last three rounds in LobsterCon, but like I also have probably thousands of hours of reps, so like I don't know.
Yeah. I think that, well, you play Meddling Mage, so that's probably the hardest part, is like being cognizant enough to name the right thing at the right time.
Tribe. Knowing when to Tribe.
Yeah,
it's pretty hard.
Oh, I'm getting excited right now to get into this deck tech, because like there's so much to this deck and it's so cool. Is there anything else that you wanted to cover?
Let me prelude it, and then we'll go into the discovery of this.
Please do.
All right, so Travis, pre-modern, how'd you get in? Who jumped you
down
in?
Here in the? Okay, in the south we had something called hyper extended. Maybe you've heard of this.
Yes.
So Farkas was like a big proponent of it. And I found out about Hyper Extended in 2019. And I was like, oh, this seems cool, because I was kind of getting like burnt out on Modern Magic. But I literally never found a tournament. I just started acquiring cards for it. And then like a year goes by, and then it's just like, you know, COVID. And I still haven't like found anywhere to do with it. And I somehow found out about pre-modern. I think it was through the Facebook group. Like, someone had been like, hey, you're into hyper extended, you want to try this? And it was either May 2020 or June 2020 that I did my first monthly.
Okay.
Is hyper, so I'm coming extended up on like 5 years.
Does hyper extended have dual lands in it?
No, it's basically pre-modern, but with Fallen Empires and Portal, and no white border cards.
Okay, so it's almost like a middle school variant of like pre-modern.
If you go to the website, which I think is still up, it describes it like maybe a middle schooler would describe a format. It says like Mana Burn is on like Donkey Kong.
Very descriptive.
And you're just like, oh. You're like, okay, this seems like a very serious format.
Yeah, that's so funny. There's so many cool formats like that I would love to be playing, and it's just like, if you're not into webcam, there's just kind of like no way to do it. Like Classic Legacy is another one that I would love to be playing. Like that's just like my era of Legacy entirely, but it's like, where am I going to do it? You know what I mean? Like, and there's just, I don't have the bandwidth to try and start a second scene around here and push my friends to get into that type of shit. So
no, it's the same with like pre-fire. Like I don't want to do that over webcam. Like I will play it. I will play that in person, but there's like one other guy in my whole state who's into that. So he has one deck and I have one deck and we played. We're like, all right, I think I'm good on this for the next 5 years.
Yeah. I've actually been curious how Prefire has been doing it. Like definitely hit the ground running and had a lot of traction right off the bat, but I feel like the numbers have maybe been slumping a little bit in the leagues. And I know that like Fran is on Magic hiatus and he was kind of the driver of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, if anybody is listening and knows how that's been going, definitely send us a voicemail or a message and let us know. Cause it looks sick. And it's like, that is another era of Magic that I was into, but I just didn't have the drive to like brew and like figure shit out and, you know, play more MTGO than I already play.
Yeah.
So you got started in pre-modern. What did you start with? What were you playing?
My very first deck that I played in a monthly was Burn.
Okay, solid start.
Never played it again.
Not so solid start. So what'd you move to?
I went 5-1 like in my pod, and then I played against Fluctuator, and I didn't have a single interaction piece, so he just killed me turn two both games, and I was like, okay,
cool,
this good is
to time to try something else.
Yeah
I've been playing a little bit of Burn just casually, like when we hang out, and I'm just like so bored when I play it. I don't know, it's not my deck. I don't know how people go so deep into it. I just like just feel like I don't do anything.
So what else did you move on to after Burn?
So it's like either June or July, I played Mono Black Aggro.
Hell yeah.
And I did top 8, and there's like some awful grainy video of it somewhere on the internet. And you can find me playing Drinker of Sorrow all the way back then. So don't let it be said that someone else started Drinker of Sorrow.
A true pioneer over here.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And yeah, when did you move to Tribe? I feel like this is a good lubed up segue to ask when you got into Tribe.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair. So basically I took 2 years off pre-modern because after 2020 I had like several life things in a row. Like me and my wife bought a house, and like we had our first kid, and I just like didn't have any time like for Magic. So I was kind of just watching from the sidelines, and one player who I've always really respected for his brews and stuff is, you can guess, Flippy. And in 2022, you can see like this clear linear path of him building decks that eventually became Blue-White Flippy. And he posted something in like 22 that was like Flippy Birds, that was, you know, like Quiet Speculation, Tireless Tribe, like Divine Sacrament, Battle Screech, Sunstrike Legionnaire, if you guys know what that card does.
Yeah.
And I was like, this deck's really cool, and I built it. And of course, I didn't have anyone to play with because I was just like, I thought webcam was kind of stupid. And around like October, I told my dear buddies Gabe and Steve, like, hey, this is pre-modern, I'm really into it, you guys want to give it a try? And they got sucked in, and we did like probably a weekend of testing where they played a bunch of different decks, and Flippy Birds got its shit kicked in over and over and over again. And it did play Tireless Tribe at the time, and I was like, this deck is just like not good, but I want to make it good. So eventually I added About Face into it, just like kind of as a meme, because like, oh, I know this deck exists in Popper, and I had this like kind of in my battle box. And so the Quiet Speculation was part of it as the package, but it really morphed into the whole five color thing because it started off Esper, like, okay, you're playing blue white base, you have black for Cabal Therapy. But it's like, what if we had Roar of the Worm? What if we had Volcanic Spray? What if we had, I don't know, Acorn Harvest, even though that came later? LobsterCon 23, the Shared Discovery crew said, if we scrub out day one on the decks we want to play, we have to play meme decks day two. And that was the deck I picked as my meme deck of Tireless Tribe. And it just so happened that I was able to like finish fourth and maybe like survivor bias of like, hey, maybe there's something to this deck of I'm going to keep putting work into this and not, oh, I went like 2-5. This deck is terrible. I'm done with it.
Right. Okay. So that was one of the questions that I wanted to ask is like Tribe a port of another deck into pre-modern, or is it its own unique thing that was completely developed in this format?
I would say that, I mean, it doesn't look anything like the Popper deck with like Gush and Inside Out, if you guys know that card from...
Yeah, Morning Tide.
So I know that deck already existed. I've seen the all-in lists that play Gush and stuff like that. But if you notice, like, you can look on TC decks and see all of the Tireless Tribe decks, and you see, like, 2020, 2021, there's a couple of those, like, Gush decks, and then they just kind of stop. And after that, it's only Quiet Speculation lists. So I always say that, like, Blue White Flippy and Tireless Tribe are different decks, but they share a common ancestor, which is Flippy Birds, which Flippy told me, I don't even know, like maybe a year ago, that he based it off some Pro Tour deck off some guy that got like eighth place. And he shared the link and I forgot about it. And maybe you'll find it for the notes, but I don't care enough to go look it up.
Yeah, fair. Okay, that's sick though. I mean, it's very cool how many things have been developed like in this pre-modern format and like not outside of it. Like Oathing into a Terravore is something that is unique to pre-modern. And now we're, you know, talking about Tireless Tribe, which is essentially something that is unique to pre-modern. And obviously the deck has just been growing and shifting around, and there's all these different approaches that we're going to get into. But I guess like the thing that I want to start with is like what even is this deck? Like what's its core strategy? Like what is its goal to winning the game? Like what actually is Tireless Tribe to you?
Do you want to do a deck list?
We'll get there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. See, it's really a multifaceted question because it's part of why I like the deck, that the deck rarely finishes the same way. That, okay, you have Dreadnought. The only way you're going to kill your opponent is cast Dreadnought, stifle Vision Charm, attack your opponent twice. And that's the only way. Versus, okay, there's Tribe combo, there is Wild Mongrel and Meddling Mage beatdown. And if you know me, my favorite kill is what I call the Haggard Tribe kill, where a Tireless Tribe attacks them 20 times to death.
Hell yeah.
And I have more of those banked than you might think.
Hell yeah. Okay.
Coast to coast.
And so like what does the deck excel at? Like what does this deck do well?
So I know people don't like the term tempo, but it is truly a tempo deck in the sense that most of your threats and answers are more mana efficient than your opponents. So Circular Logic being a hard counter for blue is probably one of the best rates in the game, because depending on the point of the game, it's either Force Spike, Mana Leak, or Counterspell, and it's still just blue. And of course you've got Swords to Plowshares, which is the best removal in the game, and you have the most efficient creatures in terms of resilience, maybe not in terms of power or aggression, but Wild Mongrel, I think, is still underrated. It baffles me that the red green zoo deck would rather play Spine Sliver than Wild Mongrel, just because, okay, Spine Sliver is like a 2/2 shadow guy that it's unblockable versus Wild Mongrel that, like, okay, I have an extra land, it's now a 3/3, which you're trading for damage. The big selling point of the deck is its nimbleness, that you can operate off two lands, which is very good in our Oath Ponza, in our Tide meta, that you can really play light on lands. And whether Wayfarer works well with this, and the fact that you are able to go get lands and kind of tax your opponent, and that plays like some theme to the deck of sometimes I've played turn one Wayfarer, my opponent has played a land, and then we've just looked at each other for 9 turns.
Because they're just so scared. So yeah. Intimidated.
Well, they don't want me to get card advantage, and the Wayfarer can take over the game, which is a thing that happens.
But you're not on Wasteland.
No.
Huh.
That is... Wasteland, I feel like... Cause so I've played, like, we'll get into like the different versions of the deck, but I will say that Wasteland is like the one card that I've like wanted in the deck so bad. Although, like, my next question was going to be like, you know, what's this deck's like biggest vulnerability? The mana base is certainly, in my opinion, from what I've experienced so far, like where you are super vulnerable, and because it's so greedy, like it just seems so hard to squeeze Wasteland into this deck. But like the combination of like Wild Mongrel, Circular Logic, and Wasteland just seems absolutely insane. Have you tested around with Wasteland at all?
Right. We've had, you know, 1 to 2 copies go in and out of the main deck and the board. And I find it really hard to make it work in the 5-color list. I had a green-white list that I'm calling, like, Little Kid that I do have Wasteland in. And that one makes it a lot easier for Wayfarer to get, like, shenanigans.
But yeah.
You don't have... I mean, honestly, I tell people who come into the deck, they're like, I want to cut Circular Logic. And I'm like, nope, Circular Logic is one of the main reasons to play the deck.
Right.
Because here's their best spell. I'm going to answer it for blue. Here's their best creature. I'm going to answer it for white. There are very few decks that have that ability to do something like that.
Yeah, it feels so good when everything is clicking, for sure. But so, I mean, like, besides the mana base, like, what do you see as like the biggest vulnerability for this deck?
Sometimes your hands don't come together, or they don't line up. I mean, Meddling Mage is often just a grizzly bear against red decks, or you name the wrong thing and it's a grizzly bear. I mean, sometimes Tireless Tribe is really embarrassing. Combo decks generally don't care about it. If I don't have logic, if I don't have About Face, then it's literally just a 1/1 for one. So sometimes your draws don't line up. But like you said, the mana base can be really awkward, especially on games where you don't draw any of your basic lands or your fetch lands, and you have stuff like Gemstone Mine and Undiscovered Paradise as your only two lands, and you're really struggling to just deploy your threats on time.
Right, yeah. Okay, well, why don't we read out a deck list? And, I mean, this is... I think that we can read out, like, the deck list that you top, what, like 18th place or something at LobsterCon last year, right?
Let me pull it up. I got let's see here. We can pull up a deck list of yours from 2011.
No. More recent.
2011.
Yeah, that's you got a PTQ top 8 in extended in Nashville.
Okay. With Rage Shamans. That is completely off topic.
Let's see here. Peach Ball from August?
Does that
you deck? Want? Yeah.
Yeah. Let's read out that deck list then.
All right. Cool.
Since right. Billy's being obtuse.
All right. So let's see here. All right. 21 lands, 2 City of Brass, 1 Dromar's Cavern, 4 Flooded Strand, 4 Gemstone Mine, 2 Island, 4 Plains, a Treva's Ruins, and 3 Undiscovered Paradise. Followed up by 17 creatures, 4 Meddling Mage, 1 Psychotog, 4 Tireless Tribe, 4 Weathered Wayfarer, 4 Wild Mongrel, 20 Instants and Sorceries, 2 About Face, 4 Circular Logic, 1 Deep Anal, 2 Fire Ice, 1 Prismatic Strands, 3 Quiet Speck, 1 Ray of Revelation, 1 Roar of the Worm, 4 Swords, and a Volcanic Spray, and then 2 Enchantments. 2 Strength of Lunacy.
Oh, okay. So that wasn't in the deck list that I picked up when I first tried a Travis Schneiderson special.
Moving on to the sideboard.
Oh, we're doing sideboard too. Okay.
2 Armadillo Cloak, 2 Cabal Therapy, a Counterspell, 2 Disenchant, 2 E-Plague, 2 Phyrexian Furnace, 2 Ray of Revelation, a Crypt, and a Volcanic Spray.
Okay. So this is similar to the initial list that I picked up. And I kind of migrated from there to something else. But before we get into kind of like the variants and really the one that I'm a little more interested in talking about, Celis on this deck being base blue-white rather than base green-white, which is kind of where I've strayed into.
So the reason is essentially just your most important cards being base blue-white, and you have your Flooded Strand. So you have Tireless Tribe on one, or Weathered Wayfarer on one, and once you do that, you can play Tribe or play Wayfarer, turn two, activate with your white mana, and have a blue up for Circular Logic, or turn two, do your Meddling Mage, or you have turn one Tribe, and then you have Swords and Circular Logic turn two. It's part of the reason why we've dabbled with a Hapless Researcher, if you know that terrible card.
I do. Yeah, yeah. Like one blue, one sack it, yeah. Discard, draw.
Draw, discard.
Draw, discard.
Okay. That was from Reanimator in like 2009.
Yeah.
Legacy Reanimator. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's all about... I mean, this is definitely a format where someone can play a 1-1 for 1. And if you don't have an answer for it, you're just dead. And not necessarily Tireless Tribe. Like, it could just be Goblin Lackey. And part of that is deploying efficiently, like deploying on time and making sure that you are able to match pound for pound. Especially, like, in a tempo deck where maybe my individual card strength is lower than my opponent's, but the synergy is stronger than my opponent's.
Okay. Yeah, I played around with this list for a little while, and like I said, I gravitated towards green-white. I just found, kind of like what you're saying, that like the power level was kind of low for me, and I just, like, when I started like looking around and I saw the green-white base version, I kind of felt like that, like, cards in that deck or was what I was looking for all the time when I was playing out my spells, like specifically like Call of the Herd. Was a big one that I just, like, wanted to, like... I mean, obviously I love Call of the Herd, but Call of the Herd is just, like, something that I wanted to jam onto the board and, like, gunk it up and, like, have a little bit of beef. And I just, like, I found myself with, like... If I didn't draw Wild Mongrel, like, my deck felt a little bit anemic, and, like, it felt like it was, like, hard to pressure and just kind of stay afloat on the board. So what... do you think about these green-white versions that have now been running around? And, like, we have, like, green-white topped at Misty Mountain, came in first over Dreadnought. Like, you're obviously familiar with the decks. Like, what's your opinion of these green-white variants?
So that was John Bagley, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so there's definitely stuff to be gained from that. I think Arrogant Worm is a great choice and is a lot what the deck is trying to do. You can deploy it end of turn. I don't love Call of the Herd in the deck because Call of the Herd is only good if you draw it. Like, if you go get it with Quiet Speck, like, why wouldn't you just get another Roar of the Worm? Because a 6-6 is better than a 3-3. He said that Mother of Runes was kind of underwhelming, which I also understand and agree with, because... what are you actually trying to protect? Like, the best creature you could protect is just Meddling Mage, because everything just protects itself, because they can either grow out of the way, or, like, Wild Mongrel and Psychotog are black. I mean, Wild Mongrel isn't black, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He was playing Glory, which I don't love. I think it's interesting just because there are games you never draw more than two lands. Like, you just operate off one land and Undiscovered Paradise the whole time. He had Genesis in his board, which I do think is needed. I'll put it out there that really grindy decks like The Rock, like actual The Rock, not Roxer, like Black-White Control, Landstill are really tough matches because that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to be like this tempo-y, grindy deck, and they just do it better. You know, like, you're going to have our time overcoming something like that, but most of those decks can't deal with the Genesis in the graveyard, so you're like, all right, you cast Wrath of God. Here's a Wild Mongrel again.
That's sick. I didn't know about the Genesis deck, and that's actually definitely spinning some gears in my brain right now. Glory was a card that I cut when I put it together. I kind of did him a disservice because I took his list and made changes to it before I tried playing with it, but like, Glory was something that I cut for a Singleton Weathered Wayfarer, which has like been pretty cool. Like, you obviously want cards in your hand all the time. So like, Wayfarer is really nice for staying up on cards, and it's also like kind of an easy cut if you're on the play. You can just be like, all right, I'm just gonna like sideboard this out now because like my chances of activating it are now like lower, and like I might be able to put something more high impact into it. Arrogant Worm though, I just like fucking adore. Like, I like cannot get enough of that card. It feels so good in the deck. Like,
it's scary.
Yeah, it's scurry. Like, when I'm like playing it, like I feel like you just like you said, like you do it instant speed on the end step, so you can like hold up Circular Logic, you can hold up Plow, whatever interaction, and if they don't play anything worth countering or worth interacting with, and you get to like throw out a 4/4 on the board. And I will say too, like I was going to ask you about Mother of Runes. You kind of covered that already. Like, Mother of Runes was so good in Legacy back in the day, and just always feels so anemic in pre-modern, and I can't like quite understand why. It's just like, just kind of sits there, and like, it does make your opponent's life miserable, like when they're on like a 4-plow deck and like that's kind of their only answers to things. Like, it does make their life pretty miserable, and like, it can stall a lot. But like, that's something that I've been kind of going back and forth on, like whether I want to cut Mom and try out Meddling Mage in this green white base. So I guess you're a proponent, obviously, of Meddling Mage over Mother of Runes.
I mean, sometimes Mage just ends games. Sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you just name the card that they need to play to win.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that Meddling Mage, like, personally is one of the best creatures in pre-moderns, if not one of the best cards, for sure.
It's up there.
Yeah.
Top four.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, so both of these decks, though, are both, like, you know, 4 to 5 color and can kind of jam whatever they want. So I kind of wanted to go over some key card choices here. And the first card that I wanted to talk about is Aboutface. I feel like Aboutface fucking sucks. Like, I've probably played 20 games with the deck, and I've got one single kill with Aboutface. I feel like I'm constantly sideboarding it out. I'm also only running two, but I just, like, it just like feels so bad all the time. And like, I have such a hard time lining it up. And the card that I've been so like super sold on lately is Seize the Day. And I feel like they kind of interact in the same vein, but like, I don't know. How do you feel about Face?
Okay. Well, first props to Crazy Carl for the Seize the Day tech. He joined like our tribe Discord, and his very first message was just like, have y'all considered Seize the Day? And like, five people in a row were just like, emoji.
Yeah.
And like pog face. And it's been sick. It's been sick. Like, it's been so good. Cause I always thought it was like the mana costs were backwards, that it was like three on the front and four on the back, which is kind of terrible.
Right. But, especially if you're like pitching it like hard to cast on the backside.
Yeah. But, so that's the deal. Aboutface has gone in and out of the deck. I came back from LobsterCon 23 and I played like the July monthly. So my good buddy Steve was like, hey, have you considered Wild Mongrel on the plane ride back? And that's what took the deck forward. But he's like, have you also considered Cunning Wish? And if you don't know, Cunning Wish is an instant for blue 2, and it has the following text. look at your sideboard. You lose the game. That's what it does in Tireless Tribe.
Okay. So that card's out. That card's gone. Yeah.
So I tried to put About Face in the board, and that monthly, even though I got, you know, to like fourth, like I didn't About Face a single person once. You have to play it in the deck. You have to play them in the 75 because they have to respect Tribe. If they don't respect Tribe, that takes away a really critical component of every turn that I don't respect Tribe, I might just randomly get blown out and die, right? And that is a tax on their game plan. That is a tax on their mental state, right? That they have to be sitting there thinking like, okay, this turn I'm going to tap out and do something. Well, if he has Circular Logic, am I just going to die on the backswing, right, to this stupid 1-1 for one? If you don't play any About Face, then they can just be like, oh, you countered my 5-drop. Well, okay, that's fine. I'll take one.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. I do love, too, About Facing a Wall of Roots is about the most satisfying feeling
it's
ever.
Yeah.
So, like, it does have, like, utility outside of it, but, like, I just can't get it to work, and I just like feel like I'm like always sideboarding it out in favor of like different things. But I definitely respect that whole idea of, you know, your opponent is always thinking about it. They're always questioning what they're doing. They're going to play their cards differently. They might play their cards in a less optimal way just to like put something on the board to get in front of Tribe because they're worried about it.
Travis, are you just building up equity, like doubt equity, so that you can play a 75 without About Face at LobsterCon, and we're all just going to be fearing it this whole time?
Well, there are a few things better than getting the turn 2 Tribe kill. Like, honestly.
Yeah. It was pure elation the one time that I did it.
I mean, were y'all playing day 2, or were you watching the stream last year?
You could find me at the bottom tables last year for day 2.
I was playing day 2 as well. Yeah. I think we even sat next to each other at one point.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm not talking about for me, like Javi Lugo got the turn 2 kill on camera.
Oh yeah. Sick. Okay. Word. That might be like lost footage because we were the ones streaming it and I have no idea whatever happened with that.
Yeah. It was the last round. It was the win and end, and like game 1, he's like, no, it was like, his opponent is on Oath Ponza and goes Treetop Village. And he goes Tireless Tribe. And the opponent is like Forest Sphere of Resistance. And Javi said, we're going to go to game 2.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Opponent's call like, an what? Ambulance, but what? Not for me.
Yeah. Sick. So. All right. So, I mean, 2 About Face, 3 About Face. What's your optimal number there?
I think it's 2 because you don't really want to draw. Like, any game you draw 2 feels like the worst. And like, you can always throw them away to Wild Mongrel or just, like, if you know your tribe is not getting through. Because, like, against Burn and Goblins and, like, certain other, like, creature decks, like, it's just never happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I can't get the card to line up. It's just, like, always sitting in my hand. And I'm, like, looking at a 2-2 across the board with About Face. And I'm, like, this doesn't fucking do anything. How about Fire Ice? I know that you guys, I think it might have been your last podcast, you were saying or doubting Fire Ice in the deck, maybe calling it overrated. It's a card that I've enjoyed playing in the deck, and I keep forgetting to put it back in, but where's all this naysaying come on Fire Ice?
It's been for me, because I went from 3-2-1-0. It's at its best when you play against Elves and Goblins, and then everything else, it's just like, okay, I can tap your land during your upkeep. I can draw a card and get one card deeper. But wouldn't I rather just have a better card in my deck than a dig to a different card?
Do you think that perhaps the addition of Arrogant Worm kind of changes things? Because like, you can be so much more aggressive and like push through damage so much faster that like maybe that tapping a creature, tapping their blocker and like pushing through damage, like does Arrogant Worm change the equation for you at all?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I mean, I've changed my flex slots from 2 Fire Ice to 2 Arrogant Worm.
Okay.
Okay. So I don't know. Like, I'm kind of like maxed out right now. I gotta really think about that. It's like all these people keep coming up with stuff, and I don't play the deck enough as it is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's just not enough time to test so many different variations of all of this. And speaking about being jammed up in the main deck, let's talk a little bit about Quiet Speculation. I love this card so much. It feels like you just get so much card advantage out of it, but it also feels like your deck can be filled with a lot of like nothing burgers, kind of like you fire off your first Quiet Speculation and it's wonderful. And then you fire off the second one and you're just kind of like picking at scraps. Like, you maybe get one card out of it. You guys seem like you're pretty set on the three Quiet Speculations as the tutoring. And then, like, I mean, how do you feel about how many cards you're playing that you're tutoring up with it? Like, where do you kind of have like an optimal number that you base it around? Like, what's kind of your thoughts on all this?
I think the correct amount is 4 to 5 cards, just because you are always going to have one Deep Analysis in your deck, one Roar of the Worm. And then you have probably one Ray of Revelation, because you never just want to be dead to like an Oath deck. And there's always going to be some annoying enchantment deck. Volcanic Spray is really good against just creature decks. And I've been a big proponent of Seize the Day. So I think I'm on 5 right now. The issue is that you have to really consider what you're going to play, because if you have too many effects like Ray of Revelation, Prismatic Strands, Volcanic Spray, those can just be big, like you said, nothing burgers against certain decks. Like, I was playing 2 Ray of Revelation main in LobsterCon, and like, I was playing against Dreadnought and I drew both of them and I was like, all right, I guess I'm dead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. The like, being able to tutor up that Revelation is insane though. And especially when you're playing them out of the sideboard, like any deck that's playing Survival, any deck that's playing Oath of Druids, like, it just feels so good against them. Feels so nice. I've been really high on Deep Analysis as a 2 of. I kind of feel like I never want to go below that number. Roar the Worm is obviously just like the nice singleton, and then you just kind of have like room around there to like play with your flex spots. And we'll do Dope or Whack in a little bit, but I have a couple cards that I want to ask you about with Flashback that get your take on that. Prismatic Strands. You said that that's like one of the more crucial Flashback cards in the deck.
I think you need one in the 75 and probably in the sideboard, because it's Time Walk against Burn, and it's often a blowout against Goblins.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm into it. It's nice to do against Exalted Angel. They can swing in with an angel and you can stop the lifelink. And that can be really relevant. So I'm pretty into that card. I like it. I like the singleton out of the sideboard.
I mean, it's also one of the better matches is weirdly 10 Fins, because you just put a Tireless Tribe into play and they're like, oh, I actually can't 26 you.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
And then if you have Prismatic Strands in your hand, they actually just can't even kill you. They're just like, put a ghoul into play and you're like, all right, I prevent the damage.
Yeah, that's
it. Right, you get one more shot at this.
They can duress you, and then you just like flash it back anyways. So that is super nice. Last kind of thing that I wanted to talk about was like the interaction suite, specifically with counterspells. We've already talked about how amazing Circular Logic is. It is phenomenal. It's wonderful. It's so sick when you get to turn one, fetch, play a Tireless Tribe, and then turn two, it's like you have the four spike or more if you want it. It's so, so, so good. But do you feel like the deck is lacking more interaction on the stack? Like, do you think that like maybe mana leak or anything like that? Like, I haven't tested any of this, but I've just kind of like felt like maybe there's like one more counter that you want when like you're playing this tempo game and like you're pressuring and you just like want that one extra counter spell.
Yeah, I just don't know what it is. I've messed up with the like one counter spell in the board. Other people in the tribe have messed with Memory Lapse and Mana Leak, notably Gabe and Gary Roth, and I think both of those cards are Garbo in Tireless Tribe.
Okay. Yeah. I don't like I thought about, I don't know. We'll get to Dope or Whack because I have some choices there. And okay, one more thing. Tormod's Crypt or Phyrexian Furnace? Because I love Phyrexian Furnace personally. I see that you play Phyrexian Furnace. It's really nice to be able to get that card back when you need cards in your hand. But at the same time, when you're pressuring super hard with a Mongrel and the Worm, like just like plopping down a Crypt and just like having that insurance and that free interaction seems really, really nice too. So where are you kind of at on your graveyard hate?
I think it's Furnace, just like you said, of you want the card back just because cards in hand is so valuable. You often only care about one particular card against a lot of decks. For elves, it's like they have Squee and Anger and that's it, and that's most survival decks. Like, I mean, against something like Ten Fins or maybe even Feb, like you just really need to get one card. And Tormod's Crypt is at its best probably against like Replenish, but I've been blown out by Stifle enough times that I'm just like, yeah, I think the play is actually Furnace.
Okay, cool. Billy.
Yeah.
I would like to invite you to ask any questions that you might have, anything that you've been pondering while we've been having this deep dive.
So let's talk about this mana base. So you're base blue-white, but some people are up to base blue-green.
Green-white.
Sorry, yeah. Base blue-green. One of the things I've noticed in pre-modern mana bases is that 4-color and 5-color mana bases are effectively the same.
Yeah.
Once you're up into 4 colors, then you're talking about City Brass, Undiscovered Paradise, and Gemstone. Have you ever considered like a straight 3-color version, like Pain Lands, maybe like 2 City Brass, but going like 8 fetches, like Volcanic Spray is sweet, but it's like, can you do without it and without About Face? Or can you do without Psychotog and without like Sideboard Discard? Does that make sense?
Yeah, so there's a guy in our playgroup, Jay Lansdale, that basically has like a Treva version, like yeah. Bant version.
Yeah.
But then you lose out on Psychotog, Volcanic Spray, Engineered Plague, and I think you just lose a lot of kind of your sideboard punching power.
Mm-hmm.
So that deck, I don't think can deal with elves very well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, that sounds awful. Like playing Bant Terrageddon and like you just get demolished by elves.
Yeah. And very similar. It's a bit more fair. So without the About Face, without threatening it, I mean, your creatures are bigger. You've got Anerid Brushhopper. You've got Call of the Herd.
Mm.
But, I mean, it's hard to say because you get Wasteland because your mana's better. But,
yeah.
I'm a big Show Me fan. It's like if you have a list, like play it and then do well with it and I'll listen.
Yeah, word.
Have you done, like, I never even counted the pips or anything like that. Have you kind of, like, gone pretty deep into the mana base and, like, made sure that, like, you're hitting all your colors with it?
Honestly, I started off by stealing Flippy's mana base, like, again, like, 2 or 3 years ago. And it's been something that's kind of grown over time. But it's mostly, like, okay, here are the layer lands that base on my sideboard colors. Or so right now I'm playing only 2 layer lands, but it's so I can always have red on turn 2 if I want to have the About Face axis. But I mean, to answer your question in a roundabout way, I have not done that in 2 years.
You are sitting with a mana base purist on this phone call right now.
Yeah. I won't punish our listeners, but I have almost, there was probably like a 6-month period in PM where I was building mana bases first and then just seeing like, all right, what can I build with this mana base? Like there's only, like there's only so many mana bases that exist, and I'm just gonna just focus on that first and see like, okay, what are the best cards in these colors now that I've like fucked with this mana base that I think people haven't explored that much.
So, yeah,
yeah, it's a super weird way to go about pre-modern, but that's how I like built that, like,
yeah,
that Jund flow list was, yeah, mana base first.
Like looking at the mana base, it just looks like such an abomination, but it's just like what you have to do in pre-modern to like, yeah, hit your colors. Like you're just, yeah, like so restricted on your options. And yeah, I mean, to be fair, like the mana has felt quite good when I've been playing it. Like I feel like I'm never like lacking the pips that I need essentially.
So that is always, I feel like the spike critique of the deck of like people who have never played it. They're like, well, the mana base is terrible, therefore the deck is bad. But I've lost way more games to like flooding than like, okay, I couldn't deploy my spells in time, or I didn't have the wrong choice of lands, which like, I mean, 21, 22 lands, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think that, do you guys want to take a quick break and then we'll proceed, yeah, from there? Sit back, relax, and let yourself go. Don't sweat what you heard, but act like you know. Yes, yes, y'all. Yes, y'all. Who got the vibe? It's the tribe, y'all. Tribe, y'all.
And we're back.
We are back, and
we're here in our new segment.
Our second time doing it, we're going to do a little bit of dope or whack for cards that could make the cut, might be spicy takes.
Oh, yeah.
That type of thing. Shall I start?
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to start. The first card that I want to ask you about is Defy Gravity. My friend has been pestering me about this card so much. And I don't know if it's a nothing burger or maybe it actually has legs, because
flashback gives flying.
For, yeah, blue. So it's one blue. Ooh. Gives a creature flying, flashback, one blue, something that could push the damage through. What do you think, Travis? Is Defy Gravity dope or whack?
So it was in my original ObstraCon 23 deck, and it did nothing throughout the entire tournament except round one, game three against Billy Pajamas. Tony Pajamas, excuse me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He attacked me with a Blazing Spectre, and I gave my Roar the Worm token flying, and he's like, damn, that's an instant.
Oh, I didn't even know that it was an instant. That's sick. So clearly dope.
Dope.
But I think that card is not good. Just play Shadow Rift.
Okay.
Okay. Shit, that was another card I was going to ask about. All right, Billy.
So Shadow Rift.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about Shadow Rift. Is Shadow Rift dope? Shadow Rift is one blue. I believe it is instant speed. Am I wrong there?
Yeah,
one instant. Blue. Okay, so one blue, give target creature shadow, draw card.
Just going to go whack again. So if you want to play the all-in version of Tireless Tribe that like Metelski champions, just play Groatog. Like at that point, if you're doing Gush stuff, you're playing a worse Groatog. You're playing Groatog, you're playing a worse Dreadnought.
Okay. Fair enough. We got a lot of whack shit up our sleeve today. Billy, what you got?
All right, ready? Four Call of the Herd. Four Quiet Spec. The issue you had stated before was that your first Quiet Spec is dope, but the reason you have that you're overloading on Call of the Herds, well, it's only good if you draw it. Well, you're going to draw it. And then your Quiet Spec, the second Quiet Spec, is going to be just elephants. And you can just draw other things. And it's like, it's okay to max out on Call of the Herd because you're drawing them and it's a good card. What do you think?
I'm listening. I mean, I think you've swayed me. I don't think anyone's tried it yet.
Yeah,
that might be better with like maybe Intuition.
Ooh, okay, yeah, Intuition is the card that I wanted to ask about today and totally forgot about. All
right,
so okay, Intuition. First of all, I'm going to say that I have been playing Call of the Herd. I went down to three Call of the Herd, but I do like it. I think that the four Quiet Spec might be a bit much, but I do like the Quiet or the Call of the Herds because your next Quiet Speculation just still has targets that are relevant, and it's like, yeah, you know, at worst you put like you know, two cards,
yeah,
off of Quiet Spec rather than one, and you have the option to elephant when you so please.
Yeah,
but let's go into intuition.
Advanced quiet spec theory.
Yeah. So I've been wondering about intuition and like whether or not I'm supposed to just play that over quiet speculation or if I'm supposed to play it in tandem with quiet speculation, because I'm holding up mana all the time with circular logic and arrogant worm. And that just gives me another end step option. And it also puts a card back into your hand. And obviously, if you have a discard outlet, like if you want that card to be in the graveyard, you're not sweating it being in your hand, and you know you can do it during combat. So tell me, let's talk about intuition. Have you dabbled with it?
Not yet. I mean, one of the things I like about quiet spec is that it really smooths out both your draws and your mana, and the fact that so if you have a naturally low land deck and you go get three non-lands out of your deck, the chance of you drawing a land for your third turn is going to be much higher. And okay, if you mulligan to like five or something, which is usually a death sentence in Magic, that if you have land quiet spec and like two cards, that's going to get you out of it way more likely than land intuition other two cards. I will be honest and say that I just have never owned an intuition a day in my life. But there are two guys from like Italy in our tribe Discord that are like doing two quiet spec, one intuition, which I think is cool. Again, I haven't seen like amazing results just yet. One of them went like 4-0 at FNM. Mm. But like if there's like bigger tournaments, you know.
So was he all in on intuition? Sorry, I don't know if I missed you saying that. Was he all in or was he doing like a 2-1 split?
2-1 split.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's like the downside for sure is the casting cost. Like the 2 mana for quiet speculation is so much easier to deploy. And like you said, like you get a deep analysis off of it and now like you're like back in the game. So, I don't know, Nat. I think I'm going to go ahead and test out, though, that one intuition and see what I think. And, I mean, I think that the arrogant worm kind of changes the math on it. Like I said, like, you're just, like, holding up all these instant speed things on their end step, and it gives you some options. So I think we can say a certified dope.
Dope enough. Yeah. Dope enough to try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Okay. The next card that I have is Snap. This is something that I've been thinking about a little bit, just with like pushing through damage and also just having the mana up again to cast your circular logics when you need them. And you obviously don't get a card back out of it, but yeah, what do you think about Snap in the deck?
Certified dope, because I've never thought of that, and that seems actually very cool.
Nice. Two dopes.
Two dopes.
We gotta get to dope because we're 2-2. Right now we're dead even.
What do you think about Rancor?
I played it. It's good.
It's good.
Cool. We'll give that a half dope.
A half dope.
Okay, the last one that I have is Disrupt. I think that I mentioned it earlier, but what do you think about Disrupt? Because there, you're getting your card back and you have a little bit more interaction. It's a little bit narrow. Maybe it's a sideboard card, but maybe.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like a solid sideboard card against maybe like Dreadnought or something.
Yeah. Just that like you just like decks in general.
Yeah. Like tie them up on mana. So your logic gets better. They have less mana to fight you on maybe swords or something, but yeah, that's cool.
Okay.
I'm about that.
I think we can get a half dope out of that.
Half dope.
Yeah. That is actually kind of my short list because we covered so much of the other things that I had. Do you have anything else up your sleeve, Billy, before Travis indulges his wisdom upon us of his spicy slots?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. Travis, you said that you have some doper wax or maybe just a little spicy deep cuts. What you got for us?
So, I mean, one of the things you could do is Flash of Insight, which is not great to do off quiet spec, but if you're just discarding it, then I don't know, you get some value off Wild Mongrel and then you draw a card. It's like, I don't love deep analysis times two, just because sometimes you have those hands with like double City of Brass and you're really doing yourself like a lot of damage. And that's part of the reason why I moved away from Acorn Harvest, of just like, you know, you deal like 8 damage to yourself and your opponent doesn't have to work all that hard to kill you. But that would be kind of my idea over playing like a second deep analysis.
Okay, cool. Any other spicy takes that you've been thinking about?
I don't even know what this card is called, but it's like disenchant for 4 with flashback 6.
Whoa. Sounds hard to cast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's something.
Yeah.
I don't think it's good. I don't think that's dope.
I had to throw one out there.
Cool. All right. Well, that was a rather short doper whack, but we just talked about too much shit over the course of the podcast. So apologies, listeners. We'll get more spicy cuts next time. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like we've covered a good amount of stuff. We've like talked about the strengths and weaknesses, like against the tier one meta, like how are you feeling overall when it comes to, I guess I would say like Terrageddon, Phyrexian Dreadnought decks, Replenish, like Oath, How are you feeling against like kind of the established tier one meta? Like if you're 5-0 at LobsterCon and you know that the road from here on out is going to be primarily against the
spike
established
strips on that road.
Yeah. Against the established archetypes. like how are you feeling here?
Yeah. I mean, most of those are kind of 50-50 matches, game one, and then game two, they don't have all that stuff for me, but it goes up to like maybe 55. And just from a strictly numbers standpoint, like obviously I will statistically just be favored if it's 55%. I mean, sure, like if I play in enough tournaments, like then I'll just spike enough times, right?
Right. You'll like eventually get that 5% and get there. When it comes to So, I mean, like, kind of still in the same vein, like, when it comes to sideboarding, like, what do you find yourself cutting the most? I think that this is where maybe I've struggled a little bit with the deck, and then, like I said, I always feel like I'm taking out a belt face. Like, what are kind of, like, the cuts that, like, you're doing when you're bringing in cards and making room?
The easiest cuts are always about face and Weathered Wayfarer.
Okay, so I'm doing it right, sort of.
Meddling Mage against red decks, you know, I mean, it's literally just embarrassing against burn and underwhelming against goblins a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like maybe sometimes you'll catch goblins, but not always.
Yeah. Okay. And like, do you find yourself trimming on Quiet Speculation ever?
No, like I'll take out Roar the Worm in certain matches where like maybe I'm not going to get to 4 mana or like something like Feb, where it doesn't even really matter what my pressure is. Like a 2-2 will eventually get there. But as long as they are not doing their thing, I will win. And there's a lot of combo decks fall into that vein that like if they are not exclusively doing their thing, they have no way of winning. Like Alurin can play like, you know, mopey 2-2s and, you know, combo like is not necessarily their only way of winning, but like Feb like has to do the thing. Like Pattern Rector has to do the thing.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, I feel like I'm like doing it pretty much correctly. Going into LobsterCon, like are you still blue white or are you green white?
I think it's blue white still. I like Arrogant Worm. I haven't yet seen a reason to play, what is the green-white fetch called? Something Heath?
Windswept. Yeah.
Windswept Heath.
Yeah. So, again, yeah. Like, maybe someone spikes a big event. I'm not, you know, trying to put, like, John Bagley's, like, achievement down, but he played against Stasis something like 3 times and Enchantress twice, which is like the deck's 2 best matchups. So it's like your deck could have a ham sandwich in it. And if you're playing against your best matchups all day, then does it matter?
Okay, interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, if the listeners want to know more about the deck, then they should probably hop on the private Discord server that you guys have established for the archetype, the Tireless Tribe Discord. I don't know the exact name of it. What's the name of your Discord? I'm in it, but I'm like, I have a hard time keeping up.
Or pre-modern tribe. It just says pre-modern tribe.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so yeah. The listeners should absolutely post in Discord in the main pre-modern server and catch an invite to that Discord server where all things tribe are always being discussed. Do you feel like there's anything like big that's come out of this server for you?
Connecting with people around the world, like that's how I met like the Italian guys. Like Carl came in day one and was just like, hey, what about Seize the Day? So definitely.
Okay. Hell yeah. Yeah. Seize the Day. Like I said, love the card so much. Has been an absolute banger for me. We were playing on stream last week and I was playing against goblins and I pushed through 16 damage in one turn, like Xaxes, like discarding my whole hand, including the Seize the Day to the wild mongrel. And like I had given both my worm and my mongrel pro red and swung through and then like discard my whole hand to mongrel, including Seize the Day, and then like flashed it back and got him on the Xaxes with it. Card has been stellar for me. I'm so sold on it.
How did you flash it back if it had pro red?
I cheated.
You?
That's how I did it.
Piece of shit.
Damn it. That play was so good. Fuck.
No one caught that? Oh, yeah. Man.
I actually...
Bunch of scrubs watching.
Wow. You just blew up my spot. My achievement has crumbled. Damn.
How embarrassing.
How embarrassing. Well, Seize the Day's whack. Fuck that card.
No, Mother of Runes is just a terrible card. Don't play it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that I'm going to try and switch out the Mother of Runes for the Meddling Mages and see how that goes. Because, like, the Magma Spray, or is that what it's called? Lava
Volcanic
Spray? Volcanic Spray has been, like, quite awkward with Mother of Runes. Because it's like, all right, I'm going to give my mom pro red. I have to discard to tribe, and now I'm going to do this. And then, like, you're, like, opening yourself up to all this interaction. So... yeah, I'm going to give that a go and see how it is. But damn, that was like the best play that I've had in months. Cheater Peterson. I Mike Longed my opponent.
Yeah. Cheating. Dope or whack.
So dope.
So dope.
Mike Long Modern is magic, the patron. Dope. Mike Long is the patron saint of Durescru. Never forget it.
Is he? Yeah, he's pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Like mano so like there's like all these like Mike Long tricks that I've just kind of like heard about over the year, like cutting somebody's library on top of their Exalted Angel. And Mano Brian Manilakis was talking on AT All Things Considered about another Mike Long play, which is you cast Diabolic Edict and point at the creature that you want them to sacrifice. So sick.
The best one that I've heard is when people play Reign of Filth.
Yeah.
So when somebody goes like Reign of Filth, you're like, oh, I got nothing. And then you start counting mana for them. But people always miscount Reign of Filth as a +3 black mana, but it's actually like a +X.
Yeah.
So you just like, you do the math for them and be like, oh, you got me. Like, oh, let's see how this math works out. All right, you got 3 black mana and you get them to like come up one short. So they like storm out and then they're like, oh wait, I only have 5 black mana. I can't like Infernal Tutelar.
Yeah.
Tendrils you. Like shit. What went wrong?
So sick.
Yeah.
Or just like telling your opponent that you have it. You're just like, yeah, I got it, man. You're dead. Yeah. Like you like don't do the combo. You just like start it off and then like you're just like you're dead, man. Sorry.
Sorry,
I got
man.
You. Let's go to the next game.
Yeah, that's how we do it in Durescru.
Yeah.
Bad vibes, cheating, collusion.
Right.
Yeah, don't show up.
Yep. I never prayed to God. I prayed to Long. So okay, closing segment. We have this little thing been going on for a while now where a listener asks a future question. Sorry, not a listener. Somebody being interviewed asks a future question to the next person that's gonna be on the podcast. So this question comes from Ian and it is, what's your playlist when you're driving to a tournament? And you have a nice long drive, so I'm sure you got an answer for this.
Yeah, so one of the reasons that I feel like I've always mystically vibed with you guys is like I see like the black flag, like inspiration for like the Dorescu symbols, and in my younger and wilder days, I was really into like punk and emo. So like, are you guys down with like Days and Days, like Leftover Crack, Rancid, like that type of stuff? We fuck with Leftover
Crack.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay.
Hell
so
yeah.
So if Days and Days means anything to you, like they stayed at my house once.
Days and Days? Like D-A-Z-E?
Yeah, like Days, like the card, and then and Days, like the length of time.
I don't know Days and Days. What's their sound?
It's like folk punk, like acoustic
okay,
punk.
Okay, word.
But that was like Stiz's wife.
Huh.
Okay. Huh. Sick. I wasn't expecting this answer. This is rad. Hell yeah.
I fuck with Against Me pretty hard.
Okay.
Yeah. That's like the epitome, like acoustic folk punk.
I know Nick's gonna be stoked right now because he has a Black Flag tattoo, so.
Yeah.
He's going to like this one. Maybe we'll close it out with Black Flag. That's right.
Nice.
Hell yeah. Okay, so you're full punk on the drive.
Yeah, I mean that's generally what I listen to, like just stuff from my teenage years.
Yeah, yeah. Sick. I mean that's fucking good hype up music. That's for sure. Gets you in a good headspace. What would be your question to the next interviewee?
What should be Lobster Con's like charity of choice going forward, if not Room to Grow?
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
That's noble. I like that.
That's a good question.
That question if I was put on the spot. I like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Because then it's like we can, oh, I hope they give like a shit answer. It's like, like what's the worst charity?
The Republican National Committee.
What is the absolute worst charity? Maybe like something to do with like, I don't even know what. Maybe some like, I don't know. What's the worst?
Save the dirty diapers.
Save the dirty diapers. I don't even know what.
All right. All right. We'll ask them that. We'll see what we come up with. Yeah. I don't know. I think that closes us out. Anything, any closing thoughts that anybody has? Any shout outs that you want to give? I'll start with you, Travis.
I mean, obviously, shout outs to fellow Share Discovery crew, Gabe and Steve, and all of the Tribe. Thanks for having me on, of course. How can I get one of those sick, like, track suits? Like, a very constant running theme is me being like, telling my wife about like Duress Crew stuff, and she's like, "How come you're not like them?" And I don't know what to say to that.
The way you get one of those is it's Hell's Angels rules. So you actually donate your collection to the crew, and then we jump you in and pledge you, and then we don't even tell you whether you're in or not. We just take your collection, and then we make a decision.
I donated my collection to the Duress Crew, and all I got was this shitty jacket.
Yeah.
Yeah. The track jackets are a banger. They are kept under lock and key, so to speak. But we'll see what happens when we have our new logo.
Yeah.
We'll see what goes out there. Yeah.
Bucket hats, finally, hopefully.
Yeah.
Flip flops.
Got to get the DXC bucket hats. Billy, do you have any shout outs?
Not really.
Yeah, I mean, like, again, I think that we said this in our last episode, but
for book a hotel for LobsterCon.
Yeah, hotel for LobsterCon. There's still a little bit of time left.
Yeah, there's we got a special rate for the hotel room block, and we're just leaving value on the table if you don't sign up. So please sign up for that. A room.
Then also donations if people want to donate to the charity raffle. That is, again, a huge component of LobsterCon. We are still actively seeking out donations, just anything cool that you have, any niche things like boxes, like random old magic memorabilia and stuff like that. Anything cool that you got, please hit us up on Discord and let us know if you want to send anything our way. No donation is too small. If it's small, we'll just like bundle it in with something else and let's raise a shit ton of money for charity.
Wait, I have a We have a voicemail, and I think you'll like this one.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully you can hear this. I don't know if the auto is set up for it. Hopefully you can hear it.
Crazy Carl.
From Carl. Carl, leave us a voicemail. Ready?
Do it. All right.
Hey, guys. If you keep giving us, like, good life advice and stuff, we're going to stop being salty pieces of shit, and I'm not here for that. Got to work on that.
Could you hear that, Travis?
No.
No.
Oh.
Bummer. Well, Carl says, stop giving us good life advice, or we're just going to not be pieces of shit anymore. Thanks, Carl.
Thanks, Carl.
We'll stop giving good advice. We're only giving bad advice from now on. We're only propping up Mike Long, and we're only talking about cheating and doing dirty deeds and being pieces of shit and casting Seize the Day on protection from red creatures.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bad, you know, guys.
One should.
I could have discarded and then seized the... No, I couldn't have done it. I don't know.
Nope.
Whatever. All right. I think that this wraps it up. We are out. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you, Travis, for coming on. I hope that our users are more enlightened and know how to tribe.
Peace. Thanks, listeners. Good night.
Bye. All right, recording again. So, yeah, now our levels are higher.
But we can crank this down.
Right, so crank that down. Down, down, baby. No street in a range of
street, boom, sweep away, baby.
I can't hear myself now. Shimmy, shimmy, cocoa butt. Pass it to me now. Light it up and take a puff. Pass it to me now.
Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, 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 beep,